prepare the 42G for the minister to approve. And when we negotiate with the landowner, there is always a condition that says to the landowner, the offer that we put on the table is subject to approval by the minister. So if the minister does not approve, then the offer then falls away. So that's why when we say that after the commission then prepares the submission for minister's approval in 2008, the minister then rejected the offer on the basis that it was exorbitant and unaffordable for the state, and this was in 2008. So then it meant that the negotiations then collapsed, and then in 2009 the matter was referred to the Land Claims Court for adjudication. And the Land Claims Court accepted the matter as valid. I know that there is a perception that this claim was never valid. And I'm also aware that in the high-level panel report, the high-level panel refer or quote Professor Dillias, where they think that he says that the claim is not valid. I am saying that I would like Professor Dillias to show me where, on what basis that he says the claim is not valid. Especially because if you look at the judgment in itself of the Land Claims Court 2012 by Judge Valdemar, it actually makes reference to the issue of the validity. Well, we might have disagreements around the context of, is it a community, is it labor tenants, where they dispose of customary law rights or the nature of the right law. But on the question of whether we settle the claim that is not valid, we are of the view that the claim that we settled was valid. Yes, there was no community called in Hlanganisweni, but the claimants, we said 21 claim forms were lodged, decided to form themselves into what they referred to as the Hlanganisweni because they said they have a common history. Unlike situations in the past where we say that the commission clubbed people together and created CPAs or communities that don't exist, this community in themselves, when they approached court, decided to call themselves the Hlanganisweni. We basically supported their decision to form themselves into what they refer to as the Hlanganisweni, especially because they have a common history. They refer to Jongilanga tribe and what's the other tribe? Mashangan, yes. So the history is the same. So the matter was referred to the Land Claims Court, and the issue there was for determination on the feasibility of the restoration of the property, because the claimants were claiming restoration. They didn't want alternative land, they didn't want financial compensation, they wanted the land restored to them. And Section 33C, small ca, of the Restitution Act defines and deals with the question of feasibility of restoration. And this matter was in court, and the issue for determination was based on the landowner demanding payment for 989 million as compensation of land, excluding improvements at the time. And note again, this is 2009, whereas the state had prepared, was making an offer of 460 million for compensation, and they were saying if anything is beyond that it would be not feasible for restoration, which is why the matter of restoration then came into to the table. Judgment was handed down in 2012 by Judge Haldeney, and in it he says that it would not be in public interest to pay such an exorbitant amount as the claim had been disposed of living space, grazing rights, and cropping land, and therefore restoration of the property to them would amount to overcompensation. And again, I say the judge doesn't say that the claim is not valid. He makes reference to living spaces, grazing rights, and cropping, and therefore that definition of whether the claim is a community or labor tenant, one could argue about that. But on whether the claims are valid or not, I don't think it's an argument. We did not settle a claim that's not valid. The court argued further that the claimants do not have the requisite capacity to manage the land, and as a result, restoration would be unfeasible. And the interesting thing also there in that judgment is that there were three valuers that had valued the asset. So you had claimant valuer, which was Mr. Griffiths, who initially who valued at 55,000 per hectare to 65,000, and at cross examination considered that it could go up as far as 68,000 per hectare. Sorry, it's not in the presentation. I'm just. And then the minister's valuer, which was Mr. Stain, valued the properties at 30,000 a hectare, and his valuation was 2007. But at cross-examination considered that, in fact, he had valued only two of the five properties, and at the end of the day, the advocate, minister's advocate, considered that the values could go up again to the 55,000 and above. The landowner's valuer, Mr. Felion, valued the properties at between 72,000 a hectare to 87,000 a hectare. And so the issue that the judge dealt with was the issue of restorability, and they actually did look at the Section 25.3.5 principles on that are defined in the Constitution. So they therefore the judge then rejected the restorability, saying that it's not feasible, and so the land claimants then sought to appeal the judgment, 2012 judgment, and that was declined, and then they went to the Supreme Court of Appeal, which failed as well, and so they approached the Constitutional Court to appeal the judgment. The matter was set to be heard by the Constitutional Court on the 13th of August 2013, and in the minister's documents, in his affidavit, he had initially filed that he was opposing restoration on the basis that it was not feasible. But he then, after consulting with the claimants, after having met with the claimants who had asked to meet with him, he filed an affidavit to the effect that he was no longer opposing the application, but that instead he was willing to purchase the land on behalf of the claimants. And the matter was therefore removed from the roll, and the directive was issued by the court, and that they wanted us to file a report to the registrar on the 8th of November 2013 to give progress on the negotiation that we were now going to ensue as a result of the minister's decision not to pursue the issue of non-restorability of the claim. And so we then commenced the negotiation. I've already indicated that the minister requested that the matter be removed from the court roll for the parties to find to settle the matter. And the instruction was given that I will lead the negotiation. And the negotiation was led by myself, but the minister had legal representatives, and I think it was Advocate Dugadia. Commission had legal representatives. The landowners also had their own legal representatives, and the claimants had Advocate Janssen and Louis Duplessis representing them. So when we were having these round table discussions, we had all of those parties in the room negotiating on how best we would find common grounds in terms of moving for settlement of the claim. And so there was an agreement that we would settle the claim in two phases. Phase one would be the acquisition of the land, and phase two would be a development opportunity. After considerable negotiation, we agreed to a settlement of 71,250 per hectare of the 13,000, and in improvement of 37 million. We were told that they had built a new bridge and other things, so we actually had to send people on site to go and identify these things that they put on the table. The value of 71 was not done, but it was negotiated, and if you look at Judge Feldman's judgment of 2012, already in his judgment, he was saying that the value that we will end up having to pay as government then was over 1 billion. That's what he said in his judgment. but at least a minimum of 750 something. So if you take into account the issues of escalation of values and that and whatnot, we negotiated for 71,000 a hectare. Although, as you are aware, in 2009 already they wanted up to 87,000 a hectare then. Some of the issues that created such high values was the fact that Malamala is next to the Kruger National Park, and the fences between the Kruger and Malamala in 1993-94 were dropped, and which then meant that the animals in the Kruger who are drinking water on the river can be seen by the guests who come and visit a seven-star establishment, yes, Malamala, and so those were some of the issues. And that is something that is historic. And just to say that Malamala is a seven-star facility that is, what is the word, frequented by international guests only, and very few of the communities, well, none can afford, could afford to even go and visit. I've already indicated that there was a phase one, which was the acquisition, and phase two, which is the co-management of the property. What we did was that we appointed Vumelana Advisory Fund to assist in transactional advice. We understood that we were not experts on hotels and ecotourism, and so they brought in an expert who understood the industry so that we could negotiate on the co-management aspect. So as a result, the previous landowners, which is now the Rattray family or the Malamala ranch, negotiated that because what we did was phase one, we were going to transfer the property immediately. But it didn't mean that the business would cease to operate. They negotiated that in the interim until the 31st of January 2015, they would rent from the new owners now, which is the Clemens. And the rental at that point in time was agreed upon at 700,000 a month, and this was going to be until we finalized the co-management agreement. And so the agreement was signed to that effect. The next slide is just statistical information on the claim. It's information that I've already communicated. This slide just gives you a picture of where Malamala is. It's the lighter color. That's Malamala, and the green is also other properties that are claimed, and the one that is next to it on the left-hand side in the middle speaks to Londolozi as well, and Londolozi also has a claim on the property. But the interesting thing is that at that point in time, Londolozi was saying that they would be a partner with when they approached the court in the land claims court, they'd be a partner with the claimant. But currently, Sam Ulondolozi are disputing the validity of the claim. So it's interesting that on one hand they want to partner, but on the other hand they want to dispute the validity of the claim. The co-management, which is the phase two aspect, was negotiated in this session. The Malamala Ranch Pty Ltd, which is on the left at the top, consists of the previous land owners, and on the right, you have the communal property association called Nwanda Mari, which the two partners would form a new co-menco, and this is intended to actually run the business of the Malamala Game Reserve, and they would have a partnership. And also, if you see at the top, there's a community equity trust. There was an agreement that a trust would be set up, and this trust would be set up for the community so that they're able to do education and other initiatives. And the money that goes into the trust comes from a levy that is levied on each person who goes and visits Malamala for the benefit of the community. And so the Malamala Ranch Pty Ltd, they brought the business and the going concern, the trademark. In fact, the the Malamala brand is in the trademark, was donated equipment from cutlery to the guns and the vehicles that are needed were also donated. And the CPA, because we are clear that we want to separate the land holding entity from the business entity, created a new company called Monzo, which is a company that then holds a share in the management company on behalf of the CPA for the community. And this is the one where we say Mr. Shilote sits as a board member on behalf of government. This percentage was the initial percentage that was proposed for the Malamala, and I just wanted to say the important issue as well, Chair, is to note that when we bought the land and we bought the improvements, we didn't buy the business, but we negotiated for the community to have equity in the business, which is the reference that I'm making to now in terms of the shape of the business. I've already indicated that the claimants formed a CPA, which is called Mandlamari, and that it functions as the governing structure and has 15 committee members. We also created substructures for the CPA, which was the one which was going to deal with social cohesion, one that deals with a technical committee so that if there are initiatives around development, they are the ones who lead to support the CPA. There was one on economic development and the governance committee, and each of the committees consists of four people, and these people are supporting the CPA in the running of their affairs. As you are aware, the CPA is currently facing internal strife, and the issues are around leadership and financial accountability. However, the business still continues because not necessarily associated with individuals. The structure was properly set up. But the issues around the strike in the CPA is that after we settled the claim, we received, the claimant received a letter from a company called Intercapita. There were two shareholders who were claiming that they had negotiated the deal and therefore they wanted 10% of the value of the settlement because they created the opportunity, and that total I think was 50 million that they wanted. And so they took the claimants to court, and we had to then intervene on behalf of the state where we were saying that we wanted to secure the funds of the state. From my perspective, we communicated to them saying that we negotiated the settlement under the instruction of the minister when the matter was removed from the land and from the constitutional court. And at no point in time did I have any interaction with them. The matter was finally settled last year, where the Intercapita finally settled for, I think, 500,000, because there was really no case. And that was, the 500,000 was not from government, it was the claimant community who decided to settle with them. Because the CPA chair at that point in time had signed an agreement before we started the negotiation, had signed an agreement with that company saying that they would bring them on board to help with the settlement. And as a result, the CPA chair had to be removed at that time because of the fact that he had signed a document saying that he would work with that company. So that left a vacuum, and an interim head was appointed, but it appears that the head acting was or is not strong, and we've got treasurer, Derek. Mr. Mtabin, who is very strong. Derek has almost taken over the running of the CPA, and I don't think that he wants to account to anybody. At some point in time, we wrote to Derek, I wrote specifically to say to him, when we were setting up the structures, he can't be in all three structures, because the agreement is that if you are head or in a committee of the CPA, you cannot be in the committee of the trust and also the company. He never responded, but I'm told by my team that he indicated that we have settled the claim, and so he doesn't know why I'm involved. But basically, the interesting thing for me is that when we negotiated, remember I said that we sat around the table with all of these parties. Uderic was the lead in representing the community. So at no point in time was he not aware of what was happening. But as soon as the transaction was finalized and the parties signed, then all of a sudden there were problems with Uderic not wanting to. Yeah, interesting things. Maybe I will leave it at that. But that's the challenge. The business is making money, and the payments are happening, but Uderic now says that only a certain group is entitled to payment, and as a result, he pays that group the dividends, and the other group don't get the dividends. So it's not that the money is not coming, it's just that the money goes to a certain grouping and doesn't go to the other. And he tries and justifies it, but there is no justification, because when the settlement agreements were signed, he was the one who was signing on behalf of the claiming community. So the benefits I've already indicated would be that there would be seamless continuation of the international brand, and the immediate benefit to the community, I'm on page 15, would be rental on the land, the annual dividends, and the tourism levy, which was going to go from the hotel directly to the trust. And when we negotiated the settlement, there was no financial commitment or liability that was incurred by the community. I've already spoken about the commitment. And just to mention that the land was transferred by the 30th of October 2013 already, and the title deed was given. And 18 just gives a breakdown of the what would be paid to the claimant community via the Monzo, from Monzo to the CPA. The final negotiation would be that Malamala Ranch would own 70% and the community initially would own 30. And then 5 to 10, it would be 60-40, and then 11 to 20, it would be 50-50. And the intent would be, in the long run, the community would be able to own a majority share. I've already indicated that the Malamala brand was donated to the Newco. The old previous owners also injected, was it 20 million each, towards the working capital of the business, and they also continued to focus on the international marketing and sales. Page 22, part of the agreement that we created, I initially said phase one, we were able to sign off immediately, as you have said that, as I indicated, the negotiation started in 2013, and by October of 2013, we'd transferred the property. But there was an agreement that the co-management needed to be negotiated, and it took a good 2 years for us to negotiate the co-management. And the documents had various framework agreements that guided what would happen, including employment, development skills, strict transformation requirements, and for the community also to identify and fill vacancies as they arise, and also that the trust would provide training and send students to university so that they're able to come in and fill posts. And the focus was tourism, hospitality, wildlife conservation, sales. So there was a full package that would ensure that there was a transformation. So the framework agreements were made available even to court when InterCapital took us to court in terms of how we settled. Also that we're working with the sitters around identifying individuals from the community who would be able to be part of the project. Page 24. So in the year 2017-18, the business made a profit after tax of 46 million and declared dividends of 79%, whereas the community received an amount of 10 million. This is in addition to the 12 million which they received for rentals for that financial year. 15 students have been admitted to various training institutions through the bursaries that come out of the levy that goes to the trust, as already indicated. And as of March 2016, 5.7 million had already been accumulated for the trust. I also just needed to mention that if you looked at the map that I had shown on Malamala, the top part is where the main ranch is. The color, the lighter color. So the current Malamala game ranch is on the top part. I am challenged technologically. So on the 1, 2, 3, the top, so the Malamala beds are situated at the top there. Oh, sorry, can I use the mouse? Yes, thank you. So they are situated here, the current existing beds. So the community here at the bottom are going to create a new business venture, which is separate from this one. So they'll be benefiting with the partnership here with the previous owners, but they have their own thing that they're going to be creating. And the same transactional advisors that were advising them are going to be assisting. And this part is called the Charleston Development, the bottom part. And they will be using their own resources and they will be able to use to get different partners to try and assist them. So that slide explains that the Malamala part is the 9 hectares and then the Charleston part is the 4,000 hectares where they even know what the density of beds. This was done by the experts, whereas the one in Malamala is 92 tourist beds and this one a total of 42. So they did an analysis and they know what the industry norm is in terms of what could work when we're dealing with a 7-star operation. I've already indicated that Fumelana was the advisory fund and they were going to assist with organizational development and also the co-management. And they gave us advice on what to how to proceed. This one is more content in terms of what I've already indicated in terms of the milestones. Where we said that where possible the business would undertake to employ members of the community and big four community members were permanently employed. And bear in mind that when the settlement was signed, we went to the area to confirm to the current workers that they were not going to lose their jobs, but we said that there was going to be more development. And that also that the Malamala, the main area is being refurbished as well. And additional 27 members were employed. And then they added 20 million by end of the year. What year was that one? 34 million was to be spent again, as I said, in the redevelopment of the main camp. We've already indicated the 700,000 per month, which when the final agreement was signed, the rental due to the CPA was calculated again by the experts at 560,000 a month with an annual escalation And since November 2014 up to December 2017, the CPA has received 36.2 million on lease rentals. That's up until 2017. So you can add now the 2018 values. And the tourism levy, which is 125 rand per guest, already indicated that 5.5 million and 15 community members have gone to institutions of higher learning. And the profit for the first year for Malamala, which I've already indicated that there were three, it's the CPA lease, it's the profit of the business, and it's the trust. Dividend of 40 million was declared, and the claimant community was paid to Monzo, the company of the claimants, and they then decided to pay out 6 million of that. And that's the money that Derek decides that is going to go to half and not the other. I've already spoke about Charlton, the development of the new area, camp, and that phase one of the development will result in the establishment of 18 beds, which are luxury tented to the value of 6 million. And that the EIA has already been is at an advanced stage. And the work again is happening in with the transitional advisors as well, assisting the community independently of us as a department. I think the lessons that we've learned generally is the issue of the membership and verification, which is the issue that I refer to as where only half of the claimant community is benefiting, because there's now an issue about verification. And so we are again having to work on how to help the community resolve that issue. And the issue of the lack of accountability of the CPA executives, where, as I said, basically I was told by Derek, well, indirectly, that I have no role in the CPA. And also then, I think what we probably have learned is that even though the money is coming in, we need, or government needs, to define better how the benefit sharing gets to Ukokodam, you know, because the money is coming in, but how do we ensure that each individual household actually gets their benefit that's due to them? And trying to circumvent underhanded deals, because what we've learned as well is that in this high value, high impact projects, very often you've got third parties, and especially big business people come and make community members sign contracts, and then all of a sudden they come up and say that we require that you make good on your promise on a contract where nothing was done, but they still want to be paid. We've got a similar situation in KZN, where there was a deal for 20 million, nothing happened, but the individuals have taken the claimant community to court for specific performance, and they want their 20 million. So those are some of the lessons, and we find that as a commission, we end up having to go in to become party to those proceedings to defend the resources of the state. The other issue is, again, the separation of governance structure from the business structure for sustainability. Though the community know that that's what we require, in this instance, we will not when we told them that they needed to separate. I think I will leave it at that, Chair, and thank you very much. My team will assist in responses as and when necessary. Thank you.
Members, you have been listening to the presentation. You have learned that Derek is everything in that business. no one can face Derek. Derek is running the show. Malamala is not the claimant business or land, but it's Derek and some individual's land, which is not really good. Because when looking at that structure, at the structure they self system, the composition of Monzo, maybe it can clarify, composition of Monzo and also composition of Menko. And also to just indicate, you can notice, to indicate the role of the executive. Because it seems as if Derek is the executive, the role of the executive in this whole process, not the role of Derek, but of the executive who took decision, who must implement the decision. Honorable members who have been listening to the presentation, can we talk to it? Honorable Matthias, Honorable Masindi, Honorable Matthias. Chavik.
Thanks, Chair. I guess that there was a specific intention, an objective which the committee needed to get from this presentation. And in an absence of a specific objective, the exercise is meaningless. Come again? No, it's not my fault. Not my fault. This thing like is like not working. Can we hear me now? I'm saying this thing, not my thing. The intention and the desired outcome clear when you ask the department to come and make it this kind of a presentation. What is it that you want to question? In the absence of that, this exercise is merely academic and meaningless. Perhaps you need to be guided by your good self.
Look, the report that we got from the parliamentary committee or staff is revealing a lot, and there are more questions than answers in the report. And their report mirrors what is presented here by Ms. Kobot. Mirrors exactly what is here. But the first question that comes to mind is, one, do we have happy land claiming out of this deal, just as we have happy sales? This is drawn from the what has all along been assumed as a policy of government, willing seller, willing buyer. And on the basis of that logic, that once a willing buyer and willing seller have been found, the logical conclusion is that there should be happy claimants and there should be happy sellers. Now the question is, in this arrangement, do we have happy land claimants, just as we have happy sellers? Because if a guy can get a deal of 1.1 million, the first thing that he's going to do is to celebrate, throw a big party, go to Australia with some friends, run to the highest mountain where no one will ever catch you with the loot that you got. Now, the question is, the follow-up question. We hear that the Land Claim Commission adjudicated over this matter and found in favor of the state. And who is the, and please don't judge me, I'll mention this just as a, by the way. A judge at the Land Claims Commission found in favor of the state, and the judge happens to be a white fellow, and I've got nothing against him, but what is striking is the finding that he made, that Anthony Helen made, in that, and he ruled that the 700 million price tag could not be justified, which at one point was an offer. Both parties agreed to, and which amount the state was prepared to pay. But still the court says this is unjustifiable. Government went ahead through the former minister when the matter had been referred to the Constitutional Court. When this matter should have been vented there, the minister intervene, when all along the minister has been unhappy with the offer on the table. All along the minister has been not happy with the offer on the table, saying all sorts of things that is unjustifiable. But when the matter is presented out in the high, in the Constitutional Court, the minister intervened and sought for an out-of-court settlement. We still need to know why. There's not been any answer to the question. It is in that process where the fairness of the offer and what government could have paid for would have been sorted out at that level. Now, in an absence of an answer, why the minister sought an out-of-court settlement and not to allow matters to be vented out at the High Court, leaves us with one question. What was the moral dimension, if any? What was the moral dimension upon which the minister based his judgment? And any absence of an answer for this question will leave us with one conclusion, that perhaps there will be some answer from the department. It will leave us with one conclusion that the conduct of government bordered on criminality. Why borders on criminality? It's because none of the following was allowed to occur. One, legislative and parliamentary oversight. Legislative and parliamentary oversight was not allowed to occur and to run its full course. Two, no judicial oversight was allowed to run its full course. And at the time when the judiciary wanted to guide the process and adjudicate over it, the minister intervened and the whole process was cut short. And for that, one is left with no conclusion than to say the conduct of the minister and the government as a whole bordered on criminality. And only time will vindicate or condemn the minister and the government. Because this defeats the objective of land restitution. It flows straight against the moral and constitutional obligation placed on public representatives to ensure that taxpayers' money, resources of state, of the people in the hands of the state, is applied meaningfully, and everything that is done must be done prudential. Must be done prudential. There's no financial prudence in all of this. Now, there's not any other better lesson that we can draw except that. And we're told that the whole budget of the Land Restitution Commission was flattened just on one transaction. Imagine if that was money allocated for the whole government for that financial year. And that entire financial allocation is flattened in the manner in which it has been. What would be financial and accountability? What kind of a responsible government would allow such a thing to happen? In comparison to many other transactions where huge tracts of land, huge hectares of land have been paid far less than what was paid on this specific deal. Madam Chair? In conclusion, we've got a specific period in time where about 500,000 and so hectares of land were paid for about 442 million compared to this deal where 13,184 hectares of land cost us about 1.1 million. And this is notwithstanding what has been reported here as improvement of the land, immovable and movable infrastructure which was installed on the property. That, having been said, does not justify the money paid towards this settlement, towards this deal. And we want to say now and here, Madam Chair, as I conclude, as I earlier said, the conduct of the Department of Government of the Minister borders on nothing else but criminal conduct, which only the future and posterity will judge the government very harshly. Only the future and posterity will judge government on whosoever was involved here, and we're not going to leave it unattended. If those that were involved in it cannot be attended now, posterity will have to fall on those that were involved in it, themselves or their children. Someone must be held accountable to explain exactly what happened and why this was done in the manner in which it was done.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and thanks to Honourable Matias, who has hit the nail on the head on many, many, many instances. It is a worrying factor that the prioritisation of one claim uses the entire institutional budget for a financial year. So immediately, when you know that at that time there was in approximately 9,500 claims prior to 1998 that had still not been finalised, the department sitting in a situation now where there's a huge backlog of claims that need to be finalized, spend an entire year's budget on restitution on one claim. Now, I would, as Honourable Matias has said, I would like to know what is the going rate for game farms out there that are being restituted and restored. Because you did mention that the state did not buy the business, the state bought the property. But from these excessive amounts of money that was spent, it seems very much that in fact the state did buy the business. But if they didn't buy the business, I would like to know if there's other claims out there that come to 75,000 rand a hectare or 72,000 rand a hectare, where agricultural concerns nowadays that are mass productive, agricultural concerns equate to sometimes 60,000 rand a hectare, and I'm talking macadamia farms, fully fledged macadamia farms, equate to approximately 60,000 rand a hectare, the value. Yet land that has been purchased and business that has not been purchased for the land equates to 72,000 rand a hectare. But the main concern primarily was, why is it that some beneficiaries were getting payments? And it's easy to sit over here and throw fingers at Derek, whoever Derek is. But the state involvement in community property associations is definitely there. And the state definitely does have a say. This is not a trust. I've been shied away in the past where trying to intervene in state in trust issues, and it's been so said to me that this is a trust, they are independent from the state. CPAs are in fact very dependent on the state, and the state has a large role to play. So we can't say that Derek is now the person that just doesn't want to listen to anybody, because then the state must act. And quite rightly so, is what the Honourable Chair has asked. What does the executive of Manco and Monza look like, and what role does state have in ensuring that all beneficiaries primarily were verified, and that secondly receive remuneration for rent of land, etc., 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 and 700,000 rand a month? Beneficiaries have not been receiving money. So now I sit and I think to myself, 1.1 billion rand is being spent of taxpayers' money, on a claim where beneficiaries have not properly been verified. And we sit with a situation and we wonder why it is that we sit in a situation where there are these conflicts that are happening all the time. So 1.1 billion rand paid on beneficiaries that have not been properly verified. I think that's an atrocity. But I do know that originally it was the Tiny Sweeney CPA group, which then changed themselves to Camden Wandanghari, excuse my pronunciation. But I know that there were two groups that were co-joined together to join this, to form this CPA. I'd like to just know what the other name of the group was, and whether this group was verified prior to the finalization, or were they verified after the finalization, or were they only brought in after the finalization had occurred in the deal? The increases of prices from 30,000 rand a hectare to 52,000 rand a hectare to the final settlement value of 71,250 rand a hectare. And yes, time does play a role, but if you look at the reason why, if you look at the minister, whoever it was at the time when this deal was initiated, he was against it. He said that this is not feasible. So through that decision, time had now drawn out from 2008 to 2013 when the final purchase actually happened. Had the minister turned on his heels like he did in front of the court case prior to the finalisation, the state payers, or the taxpayers of South Africa, would have paid a lot less money if it wasn't for the reason, if it wasn't for this postponement and this breakdown in negotiation, because initially, as I said, the minister was the one that refuted it. He said, this is not in the interest of the state. And so only 5 or 6 years later, suddenly it is in the interest of the beneficiary. So now the time has lapsed, where through that time, these costs have now escalated from 52,000 rand a hectare to 72,000 rand a hectare. What does that indicate? Because a suspicious mind can always say, this has been purposefully, has this been now held back and held back and held back, and only for the minister to now submit to 2030?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks, Honourable Chabudu. Now they really don't want to hear me work. Since on Monday. Now it's not working at all.
My thing is working.
How's your mic there? I've just been working.
On page 14, you are the 58 already internalized and around the ship and the future mix, which I think is now caught by Derek. Derek is not much here than everybody. Now, if it's permissible, I am not a legal person, but if it's permissible and it's doable, Derek can come and account. If the account can be processed, then you will seek the department to come and account. But if you still have access to the money, then you will not come and account to anybody. Now, my question here, I really seek you to balance me on this issue of the 700,000, the property using money. The government paid 700 out of in the 1.1 for profit. What movement of assets, and now they are paying 700 per month for using. Maybe I do not understand that. If it can be clarified, what is the 700 for? Why did we have to put 700 and why are we waiting for 700? I mean, I do not understand. If it can be maybe clarified to me. And also, it is said that the communities to create their own business. I think in Manama. Now I'm asking myself, because after the presentation, there are two kinds of communities there. Those that benefit and those that they do not benefit. Now, which community are we talking about that is going to create the business? I really want your indulgence there. Just to clarify to me, which community are we talking about? The co-management agreement, where the beneficiaries will hold 80-50% of shares for the first 20 years, it simply means they will not have a decision-making power. Although the land was bought for them to have those rights, but for the coming 20 years, they will not be having those rights. Now, what was the reason for us to acquire the land? Beneficiaries cannot benefit from the benefit that was intended for their beneficiaries. And can the Commission please explain why it was decided on such it's a hostile agreement, this arrangement of the shares of the beneficiaries? Can the Commission please explain why did you have to reach that hostile arrangement? Maybe one would understand that clearly it's not going to benefit us. Now, if I can get that clarity, I'll be fine. And thank you, Chef.
Thank you very much. I don't think that the Commission would be in a position to share with us what was in the mind of former Minister Gubin Quinty when he gave instructions to Oshapro in 2013. I think it's a bit unfair to expect the Commission to respond to that. The committee should consider inviting the former minister to come and share, think that and share that views and thoughts that went through his mind to Oshapro in that year with us, but not the Commission chair. However, Honourable Robertson is actually referring to the research report, which is a very, very helpful document from our parliamentary research chair. There's one issue that actually boggles my mind. Why would the land claim Commission makes an issue of judgment literally 2-3 years after the matter has been settled out of court? It indicates here the 1st of July that the settlement should not have been based on market value. It says that instead it's the just and equitable principles would have been applied. Why would the land claims court, he listened to that. I mean, if this was stated in 2012, yeah. One could understand it. But 2016, you know, I just noted it and I was wondering why. Chair, also importantly, there's this issue, despite the fact that I'm saying in this report, it indicates that on the 5th of July 2016, the Land Claims Court ruled that the settlement should not have been based on market value. Now the question I'm asking is why would the Land Claims Court issue or make such a judgment 2 or 3 years later, if it was in 2012, then certainly one could understand. Also important for me, Chair, is that there's indication that the people, the beneficiaries, are still denied access to visit ancestral graves. So that is an area of concern. If it's true, does the Commission know anything about it and what are being done about that, Chair? Also, Chair, there's some contradiction. I just wish to point out in the presentation, on page 13 and on page 19, the presentation speaks to the Manco. On page 13, it talks about the delusion of ownership in favor of the community over a 25-year period, but highlights the period is the first 0 to 10. Mala Mala will maintain 70%, the community 30% from the 11th year to the 25th year. Mala Mala will have 60% and the community 40%. But on page 19, it indicates a 5 year, 0 to 5, 5 to 10, and 11 to 20. That is a kind of a contradiction there, Chair. My question would be, if also the presentation indicates, and I was very much excited about the idea that the community itself, the CTA, is now holding its own hotel at the Charleston area. But it indicates towards the end of this presentation that Mala Mala will pay rent of 2.5 million rand for the usage of that hotel. Does that then mean that that Mala Mala is enticing the community to go and spend? Also, there are two numbers, two figures. It speaks about a 42-bed hotel, approximately 50 million, but it also speaks about an 18-bed luxury tent, tented camp of 60 million. I'm not quite sure whether there are two separate developments happening at the same time. So we're talking about in total 110 million rand that will be spent by the community to an asset that will be managed and leased by Mala Mala, if that is the case, because it does not even say the new code, the joint venture, it does say Mala Mala, Chair. And for me the question would be why? Why, even if it's a new code, why not having, what is this company's name?
Monzo.
Who? Monzo. Why not having Monzo run that entity completely on its own? You know, that does not make sense to me. It doesn't speak of empowerment at all, Chair. It speaks about the community investing their own money into an asset for already advantaged group to continue to make more money. The 1 billion, 1 billion, 100 billion there was not enough. They want to build further on that, Chair. So those would be my concerns. The other thing, Chair, this financial management entity, you know, financial managers, they don't give financial guidance. There's no indication how poor the community or Monzo are being made by having these financial managers. Yes, they do a good job, they are being paid, but there's no indication how much money are being paid to them, Chair. And I'm saying this especially in the context of the of what the CLC has indicated, that there are people out there with the intention to come into communities that are vulnerable, where there are potential for them to earn something, and force people into signing deals, you know, that will in actual fact cause them poverty, and these unscrupulous people will then, of course, become instant multi-millionaires, as you indicated. This very same community, as well as the one in KZN, who are subjected to that kind of corruptible behavior, etc. And I'm not accusing this entity of being corrupt, of corruption, but I'm just concerned that with their insight, with their wisdom, and with their ability to direct things, that they may, at the end of the day, come out here much, much richer at the expense of the people and indeed the state, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson, what I picked from the from newspapers and social media and going to talk leadership meetings and everywhere, there is always mention that, you know, the people who are supposed to be beneficiaries of this project are not getting value for the land that they've given, and that their conditions are worse than they were before the Balamala deal was signed. And if the situation is like this, then what was the use of us going into this relationship with these guys? Who is benefiting here? Because I can see their figures that you see here, 700,000 that is paid monthly. The dividends that people are supposed to be getting, the 12 million rand and other, but other people are not getting that money. There are other beneficiaries who are excluded from enjoying the benefits of their sweat and tears. And all this thing is said to be done by a person coming from Sandpark. No, there's somebody else. What is this guy, Derek?
Derek.
Yeah. Derek is called.
Mthabile.
I thought his name is God because he plays like he's God in that community. He decides who goes to hell and who goes to hell, who gets the money and who doesn't get it. I think we need to rescue these people who are so malamala from people like Derek. And CLCC, our hopes are on you if there's something that you guys can do. Like, you know, the bill calls by some of the community members, those who are not benefiting a thing, then there should be audits of some. Could be, what do they call this, a forensic audit, or, you know, just to establish why are people not benefiting when there is money given to them. Where does this money go? And how much is this Derek, our Lord, earning a month, you know? Because the rumor has it that he has even left his job working in the bank, to be working now full time on Malamala. So man, please, you know, that this community project pays better than the bank. And there are issues, Chairperson, of this, the role that the SANParks played during the negotiation and after. And there is a mention of the name sitting Mr. Mavuna. There are lots of allegations. There's one that he even pocketed some money that I don't know whether it was facilitation or whatever. If they are just facilitation for 81 million.
We're in the wrong job.
But I'm thinking, Chairperson, if those things are true, then if those allegations are can be proven to be true, then that there is something that we need to do as this committee to ensure that everyone that will be tantamount to an own goal or what is called the provincial leading. And for me, this thing smells of corruption. And where there are issues, for instance, where we've got our towns that they could have been corrupt activities, as this committee, our duty should be to expose corruption and make sure that not only exposing corruption, but that action must be taken. And that whatever monies that were given, other people got community monies that were not supposed to have gone into their pockets, that those monies should be taken away from them and they should pay back with interest. I wonder, 81 million rand, what will be the interest of 81 million rand over this long period of time? It will be a lot of money for the community. So, Chairperson, I'm saying that we need to make sure that where there are issues of corruption, that the law should take its course. And that CLCC, let us not protect people that, their name sounds familiar to us. And so, let's push this under the carpet, we'll talk to them later. Everything was come in the open and this time it was the chance.
Thank you, Chair. I think I definitely relate to what I have this inside all of my colleagues in terms of their concerns. But my take is different, Chair. I'm not really responding to anyone, but I'm merely referring. Honorable Matthias earlier on referred to whether what was the purpose and objective of raising the issue. I think from where I sit, Chair, I raised the issue about Malamala, and if I'm correct, perhaps I did initiate it to be discussed at the committee. On two accounts. One, the academia and the public generally and the social movement have been discussing the question, and in those discussions, outside, for instance, the good governance seminar attended in Joburg one Tuesday or Wednesday, they then cited the Malamala question in arguing on whether or not there is a political will. Obviously, it should be expected that my stance all along is that the political will on land reform and on expediting and fast-tracking it as fast as possible. So then, until then, anyone in a seminar then says, but there was Malamala, you backtracked on a back of a Concord and all that. And you put yourself in the shoes of the government, broadly speaking. You know? So that's one reason, just to really try and tether it and to cross-pollinate with my colleague who raised the issue about why was it raised. So as to look at ourselves carefully and see if there is a will or no will. So Malamala then had to come, because we can't keep going to all these places, basically, and then we are told, no, there's no will. But also, Udon Fanta, Ruyamogo, raises with me one debate with my participation at ESCA. No, but we could be there, but in Kulua, is there a will? Is there a will? So in this question, the issue is whether there's political will to fast track. I think that and solely that on my part was the purpose for raising the issue on which lending I will then be able to indicate my feeling. To the acting DG, you see, when some of the critical issues are discussed, you must really call the Valua General to the room. There are issues on which he can draw lessons. I do know, we do know, he is new. He is even newer than this parliament committee. His age is half our age in this space. So if DG was someone sitting in the corner listening and being able to tease his money based on some of these experiences and persuade all my colleagues that remember there was no VG at the time of Marmara 208 and so on. VG is just like 24 months old in an office. Its first allocation, if I remember well, or something like 2 billion or something, when there was still a talk of establishing the Office of Evaluation agenda. We're excited about it, and I like Honorable Matthias' take at the mini plenary when he was debating that issue of the VG. I think I should concur right away now. In fact, the VG ought to fit into a certain space. When we discussed Malamala, there was no VG. So all the changes we've had to do in the land space, we've had to do against the backdrop of noting how unscrupulous sellers were holding government to ransom. That's why. So I think that's it. So let me go to something else. You see, I'm not a specialist of anything, but you need to do to know a little bit of this in order to make some kind of leader like I would aspire to at least represent people. We can't rule in retrospect. Now, that could be determined best by lawyers in legal aspects. So if we want to go to the fourth term of parliament and imagine without drawing him into the mud, there's a Stone Cesani sitting here, there's a Mabila Mwenya Mandela and others sitting here, I don't know who else sat in that committee. I think that we are trying what's beyond us. I'm not saying it arrogantly, but I am persuasive to colleagues to say, we can't rule in the process, we're not going to be able to go into that. Now my accounts are open. So no one must really think that I'm saying to protect anyone or anything, or there could be any stake in I hate corruption to the core. So I'm just saying from the point of principle, I think that we can't rule in retrospect. The fourth parliament in its legacy report should have and could have looked at this. But I do take kindly to colleagues saying there was no full judicial oversight, no full legislative oversight. I don't know, Chair, you're in the fourth parliament portfolio committee, same committee. I don't know why you, shall I say in street language, why you guys didn't get close to the situation. But that's the best, in my view, we can go. Just kindly asking, Chair, how did you let it go? How did it slip? Mm-hmm. Or were you faced with situations where there's one a committee week in the whole 3 months, and sometimes you find you can't be everywhere. Sometimes it happens, it's not our turn. There will be issues that will be brought by the sixth committee. So, that would be that, Chair. I would think that, though, I would persuade colleagues that the legislative overview was already there, unless it's the compelling evidence that you couldn't. Then there are issues that would need the respective ministers, probably from Minister Chilwana, Minister Mwindi, Minister Wu, but even then, we have to start with what lawyers call the local standing. We have the local standing to really look at ourselves as if we are the Parliament Portfolio Committee. I don't know if we have that local standing. I have not applied my mind to it. I'm worried about getting into that space. Check. There's one or two more issues I know that colleagues there ought to carefully think through. You see the transformational objective. If there's a big thing, it's an exclusive of what others call white monopoly capital. I don't call it that for sure. I'll call it monopoly capital. I'll put the race out of it. But if there's a big issue of white monopoly capital and there's an attempt by a community to get to own it, maybe we need to be cautious to say that community dare not, must not. So here was a golden opportunity. I've never been to a seven star hotel. I've never even smelled it. Maybe the best hotel I've been to is Southern Sun outside the old town. That's the best hotel I can tell you about. Anything better than that, I don't know. You know? So seven star hotel. I'm told there are flights landing there, specific charter planes and all. This is an economic, eco-tourist hive of the highest level. That's what's going to be given to the community. From where I sit, I would persuade colleagues that, hey, hooray, wow, fruits of a free South Africa, if that were to happen. But I take caution, all I'm traveling says here, but we hear reports that the people are getting poorer. But I'm talking about the drive, the agenda to get these people around Maramara. I'm over to another branch. We want to meet them, just shake hands and say, wow, it's great. It's like mining communities. What went out with the mining portfolio committee and we visited mining communities and they're benefiting from these mines nearby them. So here is an idea to get this asset to be owned by the people. I'll say to the idea, worry. I would never say there was no corruption. I think that the issue whether there should be forensic audit and everything, but I don't want us to throw away the baby with the bathwater. The idea of a seven star being owned by the Maramara people. I guess that just village people. Oh, that's great. That's great. Chair, I would have, I don't want to dare colleagues, but I would have even dared colleagues if I was arrogant to say, that is the proof of the wrongdoing. Why don't you lay charges? What are you waiting for? There's family protectors, there are police stations, there's whatnot. But I'm not going that route. I'm going the route of why we decided to open this up, to draw wisdom, to be able to intellectually engage as to whether there could have been expropriation before or not. I think the legal argument and the judgment said, it might be looking at it, but I would even invite us, if we were different parties, to seek legal opinion. The lawyers at these various cases, chair, are following this way, that way, this way, that way, and I'm trying to follow these judges. They're not consistent. One side they go the other way, the other one go the other way, and so on. So at that, if there are people who tend to benefit from a facility, chair, my landing would be that maybe we need to visit them, join with the portfolio committee, Malaya Economic, Malaya Tourism, Malaya. If our colleagues there could have appetite. Now they have small business. In economic transformation, honorable Kate Matthew also said that. And just look at it. In my view, Chair, now government has spent, it's called 99 there, somewhere in the media, it's 1.1, 1.2 million. So how can we turn around that project to benefit the people? Thank you today. How many learners that are currently receiving factories? 15. 15, please. Escalate that number. Tell us how can 15 next time you come. So for me, Chair, those are the issues of engagement. From that video, we follow it to make sure that going forward, it works for the best. If there has got to be, by this amendment, the forensic, I'm not against it. So for me, but how do you go forward? And going forward, my last point, Chair, would be, seriously, I don't know how we can follow up. They're one of the 20-year things. To get 50% after 20 years, yeah, it is wild. So can we have a process of a review? You call it what? But then there will be judicial review. But I don't know now if it's a contract. If that contract can't really be reviewed in terms of it being unfair in terms of content, I don't know what process it could be. These people must own about when we want them to own in year 20, own 100%, not 50%. It means in a lifetime they will never own. A child who is now school going will never own in a lifetime. Lava who initiated and the original payment, they will never, in the next 10 years, they will have something they call the natural attrition. They will have gone. Yeah? So I'm suggesting, Chair, going forward, I am unclear about forensic investigation. I seem to be unclear about whether we can rule a retrospect, but I'm very clear about going forward. If these committees of parliament go there and say, how do we make this billion to work for our people? How do we multiply the number to 100 learners benefiting? How do you broaden the catchment? The people there for the electricity, roads, everything, they never want anything that goes to the whole world. Believe me. They don't want anything that goes to a bigger world. They want the village. It's very bad of them. But one of those voted three. I was there during that election. I told you which number of them. Three voted in that station. And a whole cooler village that come in the bigger world, the people are voting. But all the benefits are going to this village. So my point is, we just need to see how can that change convert to benefit the region, if you like, you know? It would be nice to have batteries drawn across the region. And it would be nice to have this Malamala thing working for our people, all the model and everything else. Going forward, for me, Chair, this is a great, great opportunity for economic transformation. As for the intelligentsia, I think now I'm generated to debate as to why. Remember, there was no expropriation at that point in time. Remember, at that point in time, there was no, even the committee resolution of the 28th, Honorable Matthias, between me and you, was not there. So, clearly, in the past, you were charged with exorbitant prices. That's what it means, Chair. But for me, the case can be rested here, and the committee can move closer to Malamala, and we oversee how we go forward. At that point, that CPA is going to kick us out, because what will be our local standard? What will be, on what authority will we stand? Maybe except via the administrative support, even there it should be desired by them. But these are the issues that the FCC and other legal people can advise on, including the legal parliamentary.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I think you were noting all the questions. I think members have touched on the issue of the shareholders, which is really a concern. It means that the Eritrean family will benefit from that business, and their generation will continue benefit. And also, maybe if you can clarify that the 700,000 rand for interim. What period is interim? From when to when? Because it means that after the 700,000, maybe the amount will increase or decrease. Can you please clarify that? The issue of the what makes the department and the commission to relax on this issue? Because really, we can't come here and say, Derek is this, Derek that, Derek this, Derek that. You should have wanted to do that in yet.
The whole government.
You should have wanted to come here, I thought I meant to have Derek that. What makes you to be afraid? I'm not just saying afraid or not to face Derek head on and use the power that you have as a commission or as a department. You've got lots of legal advisors, we've got the land rights management facility, we've got whatever. So now I'm going to get a Derek in him stop and I'm going to get a nyaga nyaga ya kila machum de pari. Machum de pari ka ukoni koni spin, ka ukoni koni ha, ukoni spin. Na mie gada Derek is dukun konte lo bakuna. What is the problem? Ye, ma, jaya Derek. Ye, ne problem na ani, ee, ba, uti, ninga koni ko face a Derek head on. Because of one man or set up a decision. I then you'll do the you're not eco meeting. Well, eco meeting 15. How many members of the committee? 15 members.
Now the committee some of the read. Kusho kona masuku ukuthi we don't have a committee there. We've got a one-man committee. Because it's the committee that must take decisions ukuthi abantu inayo imali, the committee must be informed ukuthi inayo imali esiyitholile, ama-dividends azohamba kanjani, an individual payment will get so much. The committee must be informed, not daily. Then the committee must communicate with the claimant. But if there is a day or day, if the bond is not right for 14, Sally and Yona, the run of the show here, Semana, what is the problem? The other one, the levy. We are happy the levy is empowering young people, but I'm going to go to the levy against that. How many tourists are visiting Malamala? If one is paying 125 rand, anything is going to levy except the bursary. Because we're told the surrounding communities, finally, how does that develop out of that money? There's no development. Those people are becoming more poorer than before. The money. The levy eating a badala mapasa repele yonti. Maybe you can tell us who this is. The project has Malamala Yakala, this Malamala thing. What are the developments in the ANZ there? Kulama communities. Kambe, konile kwa kizi nko ku, ku, kwenzo ma joint venture. Give me the controller's mentor. What is it? Mondo. Maybe you partner with the Department of Housing. Let's build houses for these people. We put this assisting the government. Let's put electricity. Let's put water. And what other development except training? Then the other one is Bumelan. It's Bumelan. Bumelan Advisory Fund. It's paper down man. And who is the owner of this Bumelana? The director or the owner? Mm-hmm. And the Patalwa Malini. And that was based on which rent? Is it still operational? Or it has ceased to work? What is 6 million? Lava Patalwa dividends, Patalwa Malini. Because if I read well, is it 6 or 10?
What went towards dividends for 6 years?
The first
million. Here in Zanayo, who has 6 million and a dividend? How was that 6 million divided amongst the claimants? And how many claimants benefited from that 6 million? And the last one, the issue of Malamala, when you read the report, we know who the constitutionally, the three tiers of government, which is legislature, judiciary, and executive, have got their responsibility. And once the matter is in court, then we can't do anything. So the Malamala thing was in court from 2009 until 2018. So as the Portfolio Committee of Rural Development, we're not supposed even to discuss it because it was with the Land Claims Court, the Supreme Court, they were still busy with the court processes. We discuss this now because it has become the public matter, a matter of public interest, because now it was out of court settlement. That is why it came to the table. So from 2009 to 2013, started with the Land Claims Court, Supreme Court, the Crown Court, when it was withdrawn. So that is why it was not brought to the attention. That is why the committee didn't entertain the Malamala thing. Let me get the response.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We will try our best to respond to all the questions, and I will request my team to and just again to confirm, Chair, that in the context of some of the questions that are political, I will not comment on those ones. And hope that that the DG is listening and that the political head might be able to give a view about the position, which is actually what the question is for. On the question of values per hectare generally in settlements, I think that the values per hectare differ from region to region, and the valuations are conducted mostly by independent vendors. And what would happen is that as the commission, that was before the VG came in today, we would give an independent valuer the opportunity to go and conduct the valuation. And they would then do that, and then we would then negotiate based on a valuation that is conducted by a third party. So even in this instance, that was the situation. So the valuation depends from area to area, depending on the nature of the property. And I'm sure the collective has anything to add. So it's a science that is outside of our domain, but we operate from what the valuer gives us. And now the valuer general is the VG who then conducts the valuation, and even he uses private valuers, but they have to apply the Section 25 principle, as opposed to the valuers before who focus on the market value as the main principle. The claim was not prioritized in the context of pulling it out from a list of claims. It was the court process that determined that we had to deal with the claim at that point in time, because it was 2013 and it was June, and the matter was in court, in the constitutional court, in August, and when the minister instructed that the matter was to be settled, then it meant that the court, as already indicated, said that they wanted a report by November of that year on how the settlement negotiations were going. So immediately the matter was pulled out. We were given a time frame by the Constitutional Court, and we actually had to go back to the Constitutional Court in November to actually give them a report on how much progress we were making in the context of the settlement. I am not able to give information on the going rates of game farms. And perhaps my colleagues will assist me on whether there are other properties where hectares are over 70,000 hectares or above. The issue of why the beneficiaries are not benefiting in this instance, as I already indicated, there were two groups, because a small brother, one group, the other one is called Kanan Seng, who created what is called Mantua. They were the ones, as I indicated, who created the Kanan Seng together. Because when they related their story, they said that they come from one lineage. And at any material time, they said that they are one. They were legally represented when they said so. And we merely cooperated with their perception of who they were. And when the negotiations were happening, they were legally represented when a settlement agreement was signed off, they signed off on them, and when the verification was done, it included both parties, both of them. So when the settlement was done, there was a list, and the list incorporated both in Tanganyika and Mafraka, and there was no point in time where they didn't see themselves as one. It was only after the settlement was done and it was time for the money to come in that the issue now suddenly arose that actually there are two groups and not one. And I say it now, the person who was writing it was there, and I can say it in front of me. But the interesting thing is that when we negotiated for 2 years with the community, Derek was the lead negotiator on behalf of the entire group, not for one group. It was only after the settlement that he suddenly decided that there's one group and the other, and his interests now are on the group, and
which is why only that group is not benefiting and the other one is not benefiting. So the verification was done, and when the settlement was done, it included the verification. But we have undertaken that we will review, deal with whatever issue that needs to be done on verification, just so that we try and resolve the impact. On the issue of SANPARKS, unfortunately, I don't have certain information on any forensic or that was done. In fact, I wasn't aware. I'm only finding out about it now. So to say that when we were negotiating in 2013, David Mabunda did come to the meeting, and he was representing the landowners at that time. So when I said that there was a minister for us, there was commission rep, there was tenant rep, and there was a landowner who came with the Mabunda came, and he was with the contractor representing the landowners. So, I mean, that is, we couldn't say to him, no, you're not representing the landowners. But he was there with, around this table, discussion was happened, and there is, I mean, Dave Mabunda was part of the negotiation on behalf of the landowners. And I think at some point in time, we became aware that he is a member or director of the Malamala Group. That is not the company that I'm referring to, the new of the register family. The old one, when we were negotiating. And he negotiated. I mean, he was one of the lead negotiators. He is from Smyrna. Just to mention that I am aware that he moved to Natal as a fellow, but he has since been removed. So he is no longer there. And I am not aware of any funds that have been missing in the process. All I can say from my side and the team that negotiated, we were given an instruction to negotiate the settlement, and at that point in time we did the best to our ability. And especially remembering that at that point in time the focus was on market value, because even though the judgment spoke about just in equitable, the end of the judgment went back to market value, and in fact the judge said the government would not pay any way less than $1 billion, even then in 2013. So we had to negotiate based on that current environment at that point in time, and that was the best that we could do in that context. The accounts test, on whether the accounts can be frozen, I think it's an issue that I will ask our legal sources, and especially the CTA branch, because in terms of the CTA, the minister can place an entity under administration through the DG. The 700 rental is not public paying the rent, 700,000. It is the new company which is running the business on the CTA land that is paying rent to the CTA. And the rental, when it was in transition, the transition was October 2013 to January of 2015. And that time it was agreed by the transactional advisors that 700,000 would be a reasonable amount pending finalization of the second negotiation. Once the negotiations were finalized, the value was 560,000 plus an escalation for each year on the rental. I wanted to apologize. When I said Malamala was going to create Charleston, I meant Mondo. So it's the Cayman community that are creating a development in the secondary part, the Charleston portion. And in that issue, I will help you with the number of things.
So on the question of the shareholding, I think that we were negotiating it at that point in time, understanding that we did not buy the business. We bought the land, we bought the improvement, and we then negotiated a share in a business that was owned by a third party. And I suppose we can look at possibly seeing how the community can buy a bigger share quicker than the number of people that have been supporting. We can look at whether that is an option that is by there was an issue that Honourable Madela raised around letting go for judgment of 2016. I think that that must be a mistake because that the letting go for judgment is a big problem, and there is nothing that is said by the court thereafter on this matter except us presenting our report to the Land Court to the Constitutional Court in November of 2013 to report on the progress of the negotiation. I'm not aware on the issue of the access to grace, but perhaps you can follow that up on them who is in the province knows anything about that. But if there is, we will follow it up and see how we intervene. I've already responded to the Charleston area. Shiva, can we help you with the monitor in terms of how they run the business? If Melana advisory funds, is a service that finds the first level of tremendous the Department of Rural Development, I think in 2012, if I'm not mistaken, but they are an office, I think the CIC at a certain point in time, but they form themselves in, they're sort of like an NGO that tries and assist communities and intervene in the state. And so they have their own money where they come in and provide support, but they will also employ third parties under them to assist, for example, in the facilitation on governance for the communities, or in this instance where we wanted them to assist in setting up the new core and all of that. So certain portions they fund their own for the work that they do, and some of the portions we as the commission will fund the process. So they've got I don't have the exact information, but they've got an advisory board, and they work on a lot of limbs from cases. I can confirm that I think that the issue of the negotiation is happening very slowly, and perhaps I would propose that the provincial head, Kanele, and Sam also can perhaps prepare a report on the beneficiation, because the communities are not occupying the Malamala space where there is the hotel, but they are operating adjacent, and there was an agreement that there would be a development plan upgrading even the area where they occupy, either by the department or other departments, but also in partnership with the CPA and the company themselves. Just on the issue of the 29, I mean the question is 25 to bring that doesn't exist for the drug market value and the corporation, which I can confirm that at that point in time, I think that there was no discussion around the values were based on market value. And as the commission, when we were settling the claim, this one, we basically settled the claim in the manner that we were settling all of the other claims. We didn't deal with it any differently. Not that we were comfortable with the amount of money that we had to pay. And it was a big chunk of the budget, but not all of it. It took away the budget of the
Malamala. If I should have,
yeah,
Yes, I think that we will find a strategy in terms of how we make this money rent into the broader community. And I think that in fact when we were reporting, we did indicate that our strategy was to make sure that there is economic impact into the broader district, not just to benefit the planet, but so that the impact is felt across the board. Chair, Isaac will speak to the legal issues and the fact that we are in fact not directed, and that the previous minister before he left, he had tried numerous times to intervene, call meetings and make resolutions on how we could best resolve the impact between the FDA and the other. In fact, the last meeting that the minister called to direct the income, instead he sent his brother and he sent a group of elders and his aunt. In fact, if you look at the structure of the Monzo and the trust, what he's done is that he sits on all three, despite the fact that he sent in a letter and writing telling him that in terms of our policy, if you sit on one, you can't sit on the other. And he continued to do that. And we also were made aware that he has flooded the trust with his relatives, mostly. Those are the trustees. Yes, I think that I've covered most of the issues. If you will allow, Chair, for my team to ask.
I think in the so far as the litigation that has ensued, ever since we signed the framework agreement in Malabar, there have been two litigations that have emerged in this matter. The one that this is talked about inter capita, those other guys who have alleged that they facilitated the entire team and tried to rob the community the 50 million of their money, but that matter, it went to court, they could not approve that case in court. It collapsed. With an out of court agreement, on the sort of agreement, after the industry paid about 500,000, which mostly covered the legal fees for that team, but they never got anything from the community, at least as far as them. And they threatened to come, they also bring the state on board, and in court, they could not demonstrate anything that at the stage we were also liable to pay them the 50 million. So that situation finished last year in 2017. And then also the second litigation that has come up is the one around the issue of the verification. The one, you will recall that here in the committee we were asked to submit some information about 960. That's the number of households that are supposed to be benefiting in this project here. But I think almost half of that, 250 is benefiting in that 960. So what they did, they then brought the matter to court as a consent group to actually go and challenge the what we call the decision by the executive committee. Last week on the 4th and 5th of May, the matter was heard at the High Court in Pretoria. So on June, because we were not part of the commission, we were no longer in report that since the matter has been settled, commissioner or commission is out of the picture now. It's only the CPA, and somewhere they did indicate that they already put the department on their papers, but there was no case against the department to answer those court papers. In court last week, we advised that the attorneys for the consent group were not very strong in actually understanding these issues, because you will recall that when you have put a verification that is done by the commission, when the settlement agreement or the matter is concluded by the commission, it moves on to the constitution of the CPA to say how do you then bring in new members to that particular CPA if ever the new members will come in, if ever the people who are deceased, how do they come in into the CPA? That is controlled by the CPA constitution. I think they were trying to challenge that particular process. However, on our side as the commission or the department, I can indicate on behalf of the department that we have supported that we have appointed a person who must go and assist the CPA insofar as updating that list in terms of the deceased people and in terms of assisting them with the disputes that they are currently having around the conversation about other people out of that verification list. We could not vote report on our part of the this is what I was told by the colleague in Mpumalanga. They could not vote report because they have agreed to put this particular system in place. When they went to go and advise the CPA about this process, they were told by the CPA that no, they can't start that process until the current litigation has been finalized. So they've been advised that the judgment is pending in that matter. We are expecting it to come in 3 months' time, the ultimate rules from the High Court in Pretoria. So judgment is pending as far as that issue is concerned. And as the department has been confirmed that the service provider has been appointed and is ready to go and assist the committee, but both groups now are skeptical of allowing any person to come in until the judgment has come out. And the chair, I think there was that issue that came up around the issue of CPA, Monzo, and the trust. As Chief Executive Commissioner was talking, to a certain extent, I couldn't attach my statement to what the Honourable Mbuna was raising, that the Mara project sort of created another way that we look on resolving these high impact land gains in the Commission, because we have now agreed to have what we call the rural economy transformation model that we are coming up with, where we identify that you will have your CPAs who are focusing purely on land, holding their land only. The land is transferred in Malamara, we can confirm 13,000 hectares of land is in the hands of the CPA. And then the issue of business is dealt with at Monzo, which is comprised of about 5 directors. And out of those 5 directors, what we tried to do in the constitutional CPA and in the inception document of that company called Monzo, we put in a clause there to the when we were doing the workshops and sharing with the community to say they want someone who's going to be independent, who will be able to monitor their activities also in the form of state, and also someone who's going to be an independent director. I think that's where this session of the council to be appointed to be a board member in that chamber of the CPA on behalf of the state, and then someone, a businessman around that area of Kushpagri, who sits in their board of directors at a company level. And then from that company called Monzo, they then went as a subject new company, which is still called Maramara PTYTD. Now, you remember the previous one, it was Maramara Ranch, the one of Mr. Latroy. Now, in the Maramara PTYTD, now there are 2 directors from Monzo who sit in this board. That is how there. That is Mr. Schroeder next to me and Mr. Derek Ntabine as the representative of the CPA in that company. And Chair, I must confirm that after some discussions and maneuvers, Derek has since resigned from the treasurer of the CPA. He is now the director in Monzo and in the joint venture. And then there are issues that we are trying to resolve with the CPA executive committee that I think our colleagues in the department, the community has become clever, Chair. They know that as the commission now, who we have for this institutional information, we are no longer involved in the Malamara project anymore. So our colleagues who are in the department, who are supposed to be taking over the project, are almost lacking in certain areas of understanding this issue. But you will hear today that the current acting chairperson in the CPA happens to be the younger brother to Derek, the elder brother to Derek, the current chairperson now of the CPA. But the process that is being followed with that, the colleagues in the province are following that, the process that they followed in terms of doing all those things. I think that report is the one that is supposed to go to the PG in terms of giving development, what is currently happening in that CPA. But the point I was trying to also deal with was the issue that Honorable Madela was asking to say, on the issue of the 700,000 that was paid monthly as a rendan, it was paid during the century, it was called transitional rendan, that was paid during the century in time. Now that the CPA is a business owner also in the Maramara PTYTD, the rendan is no longer 700,000, it is reduced to 516,000 because it takes into consideration their contribution share in the company that is being run here, because they also pay rent to themselves. The joint venture also pays rent to the CPA, which is not participating in any form in the business. So that's how it has come in. And then on the issue of the chancery hotel, as we also are saying, that chancery hotel is supposed to be 100% owned by the company, it's owned by the joint venture. It's not owned by Mr. Atreides family or by the CPA. Yet it's owned by the joint venture. The joint venture, I remember, 2 directors and 4 directors from the previous owners, who are now sitting at a joint venture level, which now we are saying maybe we might need to go and review the shareholding structure of the company in terms of fast-tracking for the committee to be the majority shareholder, I think it's an issue that can be dealt with by people who are well invested in that area. I think, Chair, those were the two things that I wanted to clarify. Thank you. I'll then go back to Mr. Shibata.
Thank you, Chair. Just wanted to clarify that
the
majority shareholder is
Mr.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. As it has already been indicated, my name is Lorenzo Shilote. I'm the director responsible for quality assurance in the Office of the Chief Land Claims Commission, and not for the presentations, Honorable Good.
On the
yeah, quality assurance on the restitution process. Yes. 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 And I also sit in the board of Monzo and Malamala on behalf of the state to keep an eye to make sure that in terms of the framework agreement that was entered into with the previous owners, they keep to the terms and conditions and they deliver on that. And I think some of the slides have indicated what was agreed and the progress so far in terms of the framework agreement. And I think the TSC has already talked to those slides, but my input would be to say that insofar as the shareholding is concerned, the arrangement is that from year six, the community's shareholding will increase. I think we've indicated let's try to get the specific slide. But their shareholding is going to increase, and from year 10, so from year 6 onwards, the community will own 40%, and from year 11 onwards they will own 50%. And remember, the arrangement is yes, from year 11 they will become a 50% shareholder. However, the committee needs to take into consideration that the arrangement is a 20-year partnership, which means at year 20 or after year 20, it is envisaged that the committee will become a 100% shareholder of the whole thing. So that's how it was structured. Yeah. Now, I'll talk briefly in terms of the monies that have already been paid to the community. To date, in terms of rental fees that were paid to the community, we're talking about an amount of 48 million, which was paid to the CPA by the company, the joint venture company. But over and above that, in the 2016-17 financial year, that is the first year of the joint venture between the community and the previous owner. The community got a dividend of 12 million, a profit share of 12 million, of which 6 was paid out to the CPA. And then the other 6 is still retained in Monzo. And in this, the 2017-18 financial year, we just had a board meeting last Friday where a dividend was declared and the community is going to receive 10.2 million as profit share. The profits have gone down a bit because of the refurbishment program that was agreed to in terms of the framework agreement. It was agreed that the main camp is going to be refurbished tune of 20 million. However, so far the company has spent over 35 million in the refurbishment because we had not envisaged the extent, the true extent of the work that is required. So we've done even additional things that were not envisaged initially. So those are the monies. And on the rentals that were paid out to the community, I'm informed that an amount of about 25 million has been paid out to the 250 households by the CPA. And the other monies are still retained in their attorney's trust accounts. Now, on the issue of the community levy, Chair, you've raised the concern to say it would seem it only focuses on education. What about the other developmental needs of the community, the broader community outside? In the last board meeting last Friday, it was agreed that indeed there's a need to start looking at other developmental needs, because actually the Malamala company has commissioned a needs assessment in three villages. Remember, there are 11 villages involved in this land claim, but so far, as part of sampling, we did a study on three of the villages, and what came out in terms of the need are issues of water, clinics, and so on. And as a company, we've agreed that we need to link with the municipalities to start addressing the issue of water, because it came up as a top priority need in the communities. And the issue of the students, we take note that we need to upscale. We can do more, because currently, as we've indicated, there's about 5.7 million of the community levy which is sitting in the trust, and we'll be looking at increasing that. But the other issue which one is tempted to comment on is the moral question around this deal, which Honorable Mubuni has asked, to say, but what could have been the moral thrust of this whole thing? And I think he was spot on in terms of saying that this is a project that immediately puts black communities in the thick of things in terms of some of the economic sectors which they were historically excluded from. The modalities of arriving at that, there could have been flaws. However, the moral objective, one believes, is the right thing for communities to own a 7-star hotel in the middle of Malamala or the Sabiten, because I can tell you that Malamala, 99.9% of the visitors who go there are foreign tourists. It's not South African. And also in terms of the ownership patterns of the land in that part of the world, it's your Richard Branson's and others. And I think it's a good thing that South African community, is made to own part of that, high-end kind of real estate. So I think from a moral point of view, I think that should be the understanding. The modalities, yes, they could have been, we could have done it better, maybe. However, the underlying moral thrust has always been very clear that there cannot be, a square inch of South Africa where it is said that black communities cannot own. That would be improper. think I'll leave it there, Chair, and allow other colleagues to take court additional inputs to make. Thank you.
What happens with the 700,000 rand and now 560,000 rand a month?
So there's those issues there. The 700,000 rand a month, which is now 560,000 rand a month, I think. Where does that go to? Does that go directly to the beneficiaries through your guys holding accounts and then get paid out to the beneficiaries, or their rental? Where does that money go? And I think the chair has answered, and you guys have also answered and said that you don't know how much each household gets paid, but I think it's imperative to know where that money goes to every month, the 560, and how many households. If it's a 250 households, yes, then obviously you need to look at that, and that needs to substantially increase in accordance to the verification that was done. I am, however, worried when you're talking about now the implementation of a new verification process, because the Mala issue now has come to my ears possibly 2.5 years ago, and the fact that the new verification process to verify the beneficiaries that are only being mentioned to us now and hasn't kicked off means that there's a time period that's been lapsed from when the issue originated to finally bringing it to this committee. And this is why it's important for us to bring it to this committee. This is exactly why we brought it to this committee, so that people can actually benefit. On the basis of that, you also understand the question that came out that remains unanswered is why is it that Mr. Nkwinti decided to drop the cases and not take it through to the Constitutional Court. And this is why, right from the beginning of the meeting, I mentioned that neither the minister or the two deputy ministers are here, or that somebody could have had the foresight to think that this question would have been asked and possibly invite Minister Nkwinti so that we could find out. And if he couldn't answer, possibly the three ministers that we have could have answered in his stead. I'd just like to put it before the room that it was not in vain me speaking about the absence of ministers. I think it is imperative. But yeah, I've asked my questions and thank you very much for the feedback. Are you aware that, just before I end, that there are some beneficiaries from Wanganiri that are also beneficiaries of another claim that's being paid out, namely the Kruger National Park claim, I think it was paid out by 87 million rand just before the 2016 elections. There's a duplication of beneficiaries there. I just wanted to know if you guys knew that and if that's feasible. Thanks.
Thank you,
Chairman. Mine is just a small number for Chair, with regard to the issue of the number of the beneficiaries and the payment, I think the CLCC did indicate that there's a lawyer firm that is a possession of the money, so that helps gives one a little bit of assurance, especially in relation to those that did not receive any money benefits. But I'm worried, Jay. The CLCC spoke about two groups, and one of them made the deduction that is literally half. But when you speak about 250 households, and you look at the statistical information about 960 households, and that means there are 710 households who are being excluded at this point in time, Jay. And it's a worrying factor that Chair. So I'm happy to hear about the verification process that is happening, but I want to urge that matter must receive the utmost urgent attention and be encouraged to be resolved and finalized as soon as possible. Not to to be too hasteful and take short cuts, but do a proper job so that everyone who is entitled to benefit indeed benefits. But I also just want to indicate the Commission is involved in a policy from, I think, in the CPA. Where's Mr. Jeff? He's gone now, Chair. Comrade Mbuni referred to him as the incoming registrar. But acting DDG, it's important that you must know this CPA appears to be experiencing serious problems. It's not really regularized, so it must receive that attention. And the DDG, you can't wash your hands and say, this is the baby of the commission, the commission must continue to do that. You must look and interact with the commission around this matter. Thank you.
Madam Chair, since this microphone is not working,
it's not working, just
I'm audible enough.
You must
record it.
My thing is working.
Yeah.
But I'm a president of the
Madam Chair, not only is the FTG washing his hands, but I understand that yourself, if you respect and understand the position you are assuming of washing off your hands is not different from that of the DG, which I would let him DG. And I said, you know, we spot in this case that we're not impressed by the posture. Taking the posture of the baby doesn't prompt us to play. That's what you are doing. You should have brought this, you should not have initiated that this must be presented, it must be brought to you. If this is the posture you're taking. I don't know why are we making a giant out of a dwarf. What is his name?
Derek.
Derek is just a petty, what is called Rumpen, who has seen big things done, looting at a massive scale. He's scrambling for whatever that he can get out of the conflict. What a hand.
It's like
a yes. He's been seeing big people lose his reputation doing what he's trying to do for himself, for survival. Why do you make a giant out of that? The second question is similar to the first. And in the words of Mr. Kimbooth, you seem to be chasing with us when crocodiles are waiting for you. Look, this guy is just a lizard. What is his name again?
Derek.
Why are you not pursuing crocodiles? And you know who these crocodiles are, you should be chasing them. I don't know if you are one of the crocodiles in the man chair.
No way.
I'm really not so sure if you are one of the crocodiles. Who needs to be pursued? Who needs to give answers about exactly what happened in this matter? Which earlier on I said is a matter of huge criminal proportions. It borders on criminal conduct. It undermines everything that has got to do with an ethical state that cares for its people, that alcohol, the value for money and all of that. Look at the embarrassment and humiliation you have left the former president. Take a public stage, be called upon to pronounce figures which he could not, and make a humiliation and a mockery of the president, of something former president, of something which could have been avoided. And the minister not short-circuited that process, that judicial process. I think as a nation we would have arrived at a different outcome of that deal. We would have arrived at a different outcome. And the head of the restitution commission says she can't reply on questions regarding the political ramifications and implications.
this matter should not be left here. If we are a parliamentary committee which must uphold the rule of law and must insist or seek the prerogative to account or hold the prerogative to account, I think that's the route that we need to follow, Madam Chair. And I would take advice from Honourable Kobe that for some of us who are not there to have this matter managed, we should consider approaching the courts. You know, so long now being given up on a criminal case myself. Because it makes no sense if we cannot explain why Mr. David Makunda, a known public servant, a chief executive of Sanpai, why it could not be so easy to establish that his role in the deal was as a conflict of interest. At the end of the deal, he walks away and says, why? It makes no sense. But at this time, we got answers to these questions. We'll have no option but to consider open criminal cases against those who suspect, whom we suspect that are accomplices in this crime.
I just want to put Nomzana who sits on the board. They have information about this Mahmouda and his role. What is his role now? As he comes to me, if he has, what is his role then? And responsibility is
it's a tricky one. I've demonstrated my logic and my thought, and but if colleagues could show me maybe a feeling moment, then I'm only keen to recover my soul. I cannot spend my soul for anything. In this commission, I've made the observation that our lives are at stake. So when the whole life is at stake, how can you spend your soul for anything to adapt a relevant thing? So if colleagues can show where maybe the position is coming in for them, I think I'm only too happy in the public right to really refine my thoughts in a particular area. The issue was whether there was a moment for me where there was a chance for expropriation classically. And then there was no such attack listening to the story, unless if there's new evidence that emerged. The story is the one of high impact. There's a gentleman there who put it nicely, the high impact project. I repeat, and I repeat anywhere in under oath, I've never seen a seventh down hotel. For our people to pursue that as steadfastly as they have been at some point, I don't listen much to the current issue of division, but I don't like it. I like the issue of people determined to say, can we get it? We shall own it. I've covered it with a view that the mining committees we visited together with the Committee of Minerals, I was highly impressed whenever there's a mine. Now, Hagen is said to be a potential site for gold deposits. Hagen is in my backyard, I'm 1 hour from Hagen. Now, if Hagen is turned around because of that gold, wow, I've seen with poverty all my life. Yeah. Now that we're on 100 chairs, sometimes the service buffets, and then you find this sense that doesn't have been, I never dish it. I will never dish it. Because for me, growing up poverty stricken, it was a daily experience. So there in Harding, there's going to be an opportunity once in a lifetime for people. You know, I grew up in the area where people are called Damajoin. It's a neighbor standing in town who used to get me to go places and all that. So, Chair, I think that from an economic point of view, which the intelligentsia that debate Maramala never visits, I've yet to hear one who visits the economic impact aspect. So for these people of Malamala, suppose everything else Chewa level, easily. By Katan, Umarinado, Smolanyana, Mosquito, who's irritating everyone else on the other side. So if it was a fair project like in the book, I think that's a great, great strike. And that's the part that I support in the department. So I've just left a door open. I don't know why my dear colleague and the revolutionary didn't put it up. I left a door open for a material. I left a door open. I said, if there has to be forensic investigation, then that could be explored. Maybe that's why it could have tested by showing to the floor and see if I support or not. Because in other words, on my point I'm saying, you wash your baby, then after that exercise, you want to go and throw away the dirty water, and then by throwing away your child with that dirty water. That's my point, and I'm saying, just tread carefully. The whole idea about the people of Malamala, like the mining communities, the people of Hadi, the people who are strategic, the fishing towns and all other getting empowered is a big wow. It's a principal issue, that one. Nyanibana getting a big international conglomerate or something that's operating in that space. I'm really highly impressed about the morale, the economic morale, the turnaround, the transformation. At that point, the 20 years now you projected that slide, you know, to use this time, you mean there. The 20 years, I'm worried that we're living that open. Remember, for such scale projects, 40% is still a big stake. So these people, they ranch what? They can turn around and demand that beyond year 20 is a gray area. That 20 years is possible. Good going youth will sleep 20 years. And relatively in our lifetime, I number I get the number is exactly what it is. So in 20 years time, we will see that project in the hands of our people holding.
We have got out
So, Chair, I am impressed. I wanted to make a follow-up question to this 20 years. But I'm saying, Chair, beyond year 20 is great. The assumption might be very, very dangerous. The tax family may turn around and say, okay, give us 40%. This was great. We demand it remains 50-50 because it was undefined. They can turn around and say, look, we are reasonable. Make it 40%. And 40% can convert into what? A year? It can convert, I don't know the figures there, but it can, because I look at principles only. It can convert into even 100 million a year, that's 40%. So I am suggesting, Chair, that the department and the commission must go and tighten. After year 20, let it be felt out that 100% will revert to the hands of our people. Whatever I like against Mr. Shino, when he says, something could have been done better. You know, if you're doing something for the first time, even plowing just in your garden, in the following season you keep improving. So it's a wonderful integrity confession by the public service treasurer to say, maybe we could have done better, but this is the morale of it. So my point is that after year 20, because year 20 was big, that's basically 94 only yesterday. Only yesterday it was 1994, we're year 24 now. We are 22 of figures. That 100 million. I'm going to be the families of the year. Okay, give us, make it 30%. They will start bargaining. So let it be clear now that after year 20, you are out. Like all other developers in commercial development, in residential apartments, whatever. Developer by year 20 is out more often. Right? So you should ask us that safety valve can save our people. It's a very, very important one, thank you.
Madam members, I'm afraid there are already more forward with other items. My old half-master, Malamala.
Honorable Chair.
that we institute a forensic audit on Mari Mari, how it came about, and if this commission can't do it, then possibly instruct the SIU or take the case to the Special Investigative Units and ask them to go through it just to get clarity 100% that everything is in order and everything is fine. That's the proposal I'm putting to the floor, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members. The question around Dr. Mabunda, he still comes to board meetings. I think he's an alternate board member to the majority shareholder. I think I need to disclose upfront. Because it would be, you know, remiss of me not to indicate that the Retro family has since sold its share to another person, which is Mr. Steven Sart. So Mr. Steven Sart is the one who holds 70% as we speak now. So the Retro family is no longer part of the Malam arrangement. But Swaziland part is he owns Aspen, the pharmaceutical company. Yes. So he's now the majority shareholder in Malama. He's actually a partner. The Rathre family has sold its shares to him. Yeah.
Children or whatever, why you're giving them 10,000 to register?
then leave them at that. They must swim for themselves. We want a detailed report. Umzile Ngwenya is at this institution. We have paid this amount. He's doing this course, which is going to take so many years. The payments that we've made to date. Then the other issue is as raised by members that the legal groups must come together, see and check whether there's no possibility that we freeze the account to avoid the lizards to have access to the money and decide who must get the money, who must not get the money. You talk of a developmental plan. I think we need to know that developmental plan must be submitted to the committee. Because as we are saying that when reading newspapers, you will get a situation whereby they said the president has come and promised that this situation, the situation of this area will change because of this project. The lives of the people will be better. People of Malamala will improve, you know. If there's no electricity today, tomorrow there will be electricity out of this Malamala project. Then the other one is the issue of the verification. Verification, I think you, because I was just thinking about it, the two groups, but at the beginning there was one group. Then they decided to split the group. I don't think that if the other group is being deprived, they are dividend, it's all right. If according to the first list that we verified, they were part of that list, they must be given what they're supposed to be given. The verification can take its own process, but those people must be are entitled to the dividend. Irrespective of what Derek is saying, we have the records, we have the people who were there, we verified the beneficiaries from the beginning, we have got the list. So all those people who are in the list, they must get their dividend. Then the other one is that the recommendation that we need to recommend that the minister must institute the forensic investigation in Malamala. I'm not sure whether also Malamala is compliant, because if Derek is the one that runs the show, for how long was the executive elected? Well, if Derek is acting in such a manner, will you be able to call the AGM for the re-election of the new executive after 5 years as per the constitution? So all those are the issues that we need to attend to. So, colleagues, let's end the issue of my, I don't know if it's something that I missed. Members will just talk, but try to cover everything. The issue of the court case has been raised by Honorable Matthias that he will go to Nelspruit and open the court case. So, as Honorable Member, any matter that I've left on my computer or issues to be taken forward. Thank you very much for assisting. I think
Chair, you asked for the members that there was also the issue of regularization of the CPA, which I picked up.
Thank you very much, Mr. the team, for sharing the information with the committee. Honourable members, the next item on the agenda is the issue of
Unless people can agree, I know it's always class in the room,
or 99%, 99%. Unless we can agree, we go for lunch and we come back, maybe 30 minutes, we'll come back and then we'll deal with each other. We'll be much, much fresher. The flights would have been safe for those who flew down and the hotel booking, because Shosho, I think people are booked still tonight. Not, except this Russian, because she came in the other night, yeah, I was with her. So I'm suggesting two options here. I'm sorry I'm not decided. One, we take a 40-minute lunch break. There are cases around, just outside Parliament, all over, all around Parliament. And then we just refresh a little bit of energy. Or two, we defer, but when we open in the other term, I am our chair, the program will be so condensed. So I seem to be much more inclined towards the ask on 56th century. Maybe one of the challenges can end up.
I suggest that we break for 40 minutes. Otherwise, you know, we deferring this matter for next term is going to be really, really interesting. There's actually quite a lot on our table. So I suggest we take a break, and then during that break, people can extend to their accommodation and all that, and then we reconvene and deal with this matter once.
What is the proposal on the table, Madam Chair? I'm not sleeping because I'm sitting here listening to the confusion from my senior. You know what? Indecision is the most unrevolutionary conduct. Leadership must be decisive. Right? It must be decisive. Now, Madam Chair.
The difference between leadership and dealership.
Honorable members, can you behave?
Okay.
Honorable members, can you behave? Honorable Matthias, what is it?
Madam Chair.
This is not working. Can you come here?
This is not working.
For you to be recorded, come to next to Honorable
Matilde,
please.
Well, I agree with
Honorable
Matilde. Yeah. And that's decisive leadership, not indecision, indecisive. I agree with her. Let's be fair. We need fresh mind. And if we waited for so long for both matters of Malamala and Valmont staff, right? As we waited for so long, having observed all the wrong, look a different way, look the other way, be indifferent with all that wrong which occurred, what stops us to wait for another 2 months or so and apply our mind on this matter? We've waited for far too long, and there's nothing, there will be no harm if we're to wait for another 2 or 3 months to apply our minds on this matter, just as we did over Malamal. Thank you so much.
Why did you take so long to think that one sentence?
Honorable members, you must thank the crocodile for bringing the matter before you. There are a lot of issues that as this committee we have to deal with. So if we've got an opportunity to put some of the issues on our agenda, I think we have to appreciate it. But I'm the crocodile, maybe the one that is in Malamala. The proposal has been accepted that we defer this matter to our next meeting, but members must keep their support because the report has been circulated already. So the department must know that when we invite them, we invite the department just to come and present if there's any progress on what we have presented. You can just come with that annexure for the progress and the information that is not in the report that we are having now. Acting DG, I can see that you are exhausted now. We've discussed the issue of Malamala, we've discussed the other issues, the CPH one. You were with us, you noted the challenges. You noted the recommendations of the committee, hoping that you will process some of the, not that some, you will process the recommendations that were made in this committee. So I have to work together to make sure that we really, whatever that we bring to our people, it changes their life. But not just initiate projects for the sake of quantity or numbers, but they should have an impact. You know, when you build houses, whether they are 20, you must not just be happy that they built 20 houses. You must check whether in those 20 houses, who is inside, whether the 20 houses are of good quality, because the numbers will not assist us, but the outcome of our project is the one that has gotten impact. So thank you very much, honorable members. It will be updated. You receive updates about our public hearing. Thank you very much, Chair, my wife, to take the forward agenda.
Thank you, Chair. I would just request that the conditions also, although we have taken the session, also be sent to us earlier so that we can action them. Thank you.
Honorable members, this time was full of people. All of them were having pens and papers. There was no one without a pen. Everyone was having a pen and a paper. We were recording everything. If the team that was here can come together, I think we'll be able to identify whatever decision that we've taken. Ngenze wa omunye azabakali, obunye omunye kona akali. But if our report is ready, we'll forward our report to you. But everyone who was here was having a pen and a paper. Others were having laptops, others were having iPads. You were doing something. Can you depend on that something to process the matters that you've agreed upon? Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned. Those who are traveling must travel safely. We'll meet all the parties here at the board.